Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at Conair.com and search unbound.
The more we focus on that, I think the more we'll just find that there's a lot more in common between the religions, between the peoples, between the nationalities, the cultures, than we think. You know, we're definitely the same group of people.
Mr. Duke Garone.
What's happening?
So tell me, you grew up, tell me where you grew up.
A lot of different places. Born in New York, grew up down south in North Carolina for a little while, moved back to New York, upstate New York, about 2 hours from the city. Anybody from the city upstate is anything Westchester and above. I know you're not super familiar with everything, but anything Westchester and above is considered upstate. So I was only 2 hours, about an hour and a half away from New York City. Then moved back to Brooklyn. So which part do you want to know the most about?
From my understanding, I believe that Westchester. Now, I did know about Westchester.
Okay.
I'll tell you why.
All right.
If you've watched the TV show Friends,
yeah,
that's where Monica and Chandler move to Westchester.
Oh, that's right.
At the end of it. So that's how I knew Westchester.
There you go.
And Joey's like, that's not even on the map.
Right.
So
because it's upstate New York. It's right there.
It's
literally right there. It's not far at all.
So you grew up upstate?
Yes.
Okay.
Very small towns. Ellenville, New York.
You have a very interesting background.
Yeah.
You're half Irish, half African-American.
Correct.
So when people look at you, they're like, oh, this is this light-skinned dude over here. But an interesting thing is that when people don't meet you and they hear your voice, you probably wouldn't get that visual.
Not at all.
You get that a lot?
All the time. All the time. People see me, and I'm actually kind of happy about this. People see me from their own perspective. So if I have a white person talking to me, they're like, hey, what's happening? He's one of mine, you know? Black people are hesitant because they look at me and be like, I don't know, something about this guy. But then I speak and they're like, oh, nah, he's one of us and everything's cool. And then Spanish people, mira, mira. And they just go into it and I'm like, I don't speak Spanish, bro. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I'm Muslim, so the Muslims are speaking Arabic to me. And I'm just like, yeah, alhamdulillah. Just have one or two words here and there. So, yeah, I get it all from all sides. But again, I appreciate it because people do, they let me in. So I don't get pushed away often. I actually get brought in, you know, until they figure out, like, oh, you're Black. I'm sorry, I didn't know that. Like, it's like, oh, you got a stain on your shirt. Like, no, I'm good. I'm actually, that's normal.
That's normal. So you just touched on the fact that you're Muslim and
yes.
It's a faith that you converted to.
Correct.
So tell us a story about how you became a Muslim, a person of the Muslim community.
In short, I actually read the Quran. Okay.
In short.
In short. That's the shortest way to sum it up. So I had an English version, of course, a translation. I read it. Initially, I was turned onto it by a friend of a friend, and I initially opened it up to try to find one small thing in it and realized there's no way I'm going to find this one small story that a friend had related to me. So I was like, okay, I'll just start from the beginning. And I'm a fairly fast reader. I'm not like a slow reader or anything, but it took me a year because there was references that I was like, where is this coming from? I've never heard of any of this stuff before. And I would go and try to, you know, I would do my best to research it as best as I could. And by the end of it, I was like, this is very practical. This is something, you know, I can hold on to. I can put into practice every day. And the thing is, like, for me, I'm born in America. I'm from here. So I have my own culture. I have hip hop was the culture, right? So, but, you know, from that, though, I would talk to a Pakistani Muslim and I would get a, and this is no offense to the Pakistani community, but I would get a version of Islam. And then I would talk to a Yemeni guy and I would get a, not a different version, but a slightly changes. And I'm like, well, where do you guys get this from? And it would be, oh, in my culture. So I realized it was more of their upbringing as opposed to what Islam really was. So not to say like, I have the pure Islam and I know, huh? Not that, but I actually was looking for it from that perspective. So the stuff that I did grab onto and hold onto was more of the pure Islam, if you will. Doesn't mean I'm any better than anybody else. It's not me. The Islam that I grabbed onto was a little bit, I'm a fundamentalist.
to say that you've got quite an eclectic background. Like, obviously, what's in your DNA is Irish and right. African-American, and obviously being from Islam. And obviously the fact that you live in New York City, one of the
My wife's from Taiwan.
You are. Oh, there you go. But the fact that you are from such a diverse, background, and also you're surrounded by diversity, and being a personal trainer, you have lots of different varieties of clients. Yeah. You're probably well-versed in what it's like to have perspective on different cultures. Where do you think, in your opinion, is the gap between the understanding? Where do you think that comes from?
The gap in the understanding of Islam?
Of everyone.
Of everyone.
I think you could probably tailor it to Islam, but I think the fundamental gap or the belief around the gap would be...
In my opinion, it would just be patience and commonality. Would be, I'm going to narrow it down to two just for the sake of. I don't think people have enough patience to listen to the other person. It's more, and we get this from professional orators and lecturers, where people don't listen to one another, they just wait their turn to speak. And there's a difference between talking to someone and listening to that person and vice versa. You know, this is what couples do, they have to do in order to maintain a bond of any sort.
Yeah.
People don't have that patience, and then they don't look for what they have in common versus looking for what's different about them. You know, just a simple, very clear example, a black and a white person. They both end with person. In my statement, these are two individuals. They both eat food. They both use the bathroom. They both love their mothers. They both have families in some capacity. So you can just narrow down your conversations to what you have in common. And don't discuss, if you don't have enough patience, don't discuss, because I get it that, like, you know, you talk about topics that can be touchy, and you know, religion is one of them, politics is one of them, right? So you could talk to these people and then, you know, become yourself. I mean, like myself, if I'm speaking to someone and I see, like, well, they're not getting me, they're not understanding me, then I start feeling upset and I start feeling offended or whatever. Instead of me saying, okay, having for myself a little bit more patience in the conversation and say, you know what, why don't we tailor this back or pull this back and just talk about, you know, instead of talking about where we differ, let's talk about where we're in, what we have in common. And we can just start there. And the more we focus on that, I think the more we'll just find that there's a lot more in common between the religions, between the peoples, between the nationalities, the cultures, than we think. You know, we're definitely the same group of people, you know, spread out, you know.
Fundamentally, in all religions, would you say the core teaching for all religions is don't be an asshole?
It's not in the Quran in such terms.
But I would say...
On rare occasion, I think I've said that.
Yeah. It's like, don't be an asshole.
It's seriously, don't be an asshole. So specifically in the Quran, there's one verse in the Quran where it says, Lakum deen, nakum waliya deen. Deen means way of life.
Hey, sleepyhead. Why so sleepy? Oh, it's because your mattress is a bag of potatoes and scrap metal. You should try a Nectar mattress. With award-winning layers of comfort, you can sleep easy knowing you got incredible value. Mattresses start at just $499, and you get hundreds of dollars in accessories thrown in, as well as a 365-night home trial and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com.
And it translates to what means to you your way of life and to me mine. That you would never follow what I follow, and I won't follow what you follow, but to you, your way of life, and to me, mine. Why do I feel the need? If in my book, for example, to narrow this down to myself, in my book, it says, to you, your way of life, and to me, mine. That means I don't need to harm you in words or actions. I don't need to stop you. You know, I don't need to do anything to interfere with the way in which you desire to live. That's completely up to you, as per my book. Right?
Yeah.
So if I'm following my book, then I should basically mind your damn business and don't be an asshole about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guarantee you won't find a translation that says that, what I just said. That's not, again, that's Duke and not Islam. So forgive me.
We should write the Duke Bible.
All the Muslims that are listening, they're like, stuck for a lot of it. I mean, this guy thinks he's some scholar. I don't.
So tell me, how did you find your way into personal training? You obviously have a very artistic background.
Artistic. I like the color blue. How about that? That's my artistic background.
Yeah.
Well, I've always worked out. I come from a fairly large family. I'm number 7 out of 8 kids, 8 children, 6 boys, 2 girls. And my older brothers, the brother above me, I think, is 10 years older than me. So when I was 5, he was 15. So these guys lifted weights because they're teenagers, right? And here I am, this 5-year-old. I can do it. I want to do it. And these were my, at that time, these were my idols. I looked up to these guys.
Yeah.
They were so strong in my eyesight. And they were. I'm not taking anything away from them. So I remember them at one point, they were going to go hang out with friends. And they hung out with me all the time. They weren't bad brothers. They hung out with me all the time. But, you know, they're going to go hang out with their friends. They don't want the 5-year-old brother tagging along.
Yeah.
So they bet me that I couldn't do 100 sit-ups. And I was like, yes, I can. And I got down and I did my sit. They left. They didn't give a damn about my sit-ups. They left. But I did all 100 sit-ups. It took me however long it took me. I don't really remember. I just know that I did it. And then came out asking my mom, where's my brother? Where did he go? Because I just did the sit-ups. She was like, he left like 30 minutes ago. Lately. So this was my journey into fitness. They also used to treat me like their toys because they had boxing gloves. They'd make me fight the neighbor's kids and stuff like that. They literally just played with me. But yeah, so I've always been working out in some capacity, knowing what I was doing, not knowing what I was doing, not the question, but always been in the gym working out. I played football all my life up until the semi-pro level. And the team owner in 2004 hired a personal trainer for the team, and he obliterated me. And I thought I was a guy that was in shape, and I was bent over, and I was, I couldn't breathe, and I was like, what's going on? I showered and I went back to speak to him, and I was like, something happened today, but I'm better than this. You'll see tomorrow. He's like, no, I saw. He's like, but you know, everybody's got their limit. And he said, and I just saw where your limit was, and I took you one step above. And then he was like, you'd be a great personal trainer though. And he started telling me, well, he's a guy that travels on the cruise ships and trains on cruise ships and things like that. And I was like, I want that life. I still haven't been on a cruise ship, but that's not the point. So I worked with him doing some boot camps and basically being a cheerleader. And then I got my first job working for a big gym in 2006. I worked at that gym for about 2 years. I transferred to another gym and then realized, you know what? I could do this on my own, you know? So I didn't waste any time. I started coming up with business development plans and reading a bunch of books, you know, a lot of idiot guides too. One of them was personal training. That was the first one I read. And then I jumped out on my own and I hit the ground and I made it. I made it, mama.
When it comes to training different people, obviously personal training is one of those industries where it's kind of hard to you have to really hustle in because Sometimes people don't take that investment into health. So yeah. Tell me, how did you get to a point where you were confident and abundant enough to be like, yo, I got this? What do you think is the key thing to do that as a personal trainer? Is it word of mouth? Is it?
In terms of growing your business, I think it's 100% word of mouth. So with that said, I can't rely on my client base to go around doing commercials for me, right? So in order to incentivize them, you know, you could think I'll give you a free session. They don't care. They're paying for it. They'll pay for it. It's like, I'll give you a free French fry if you buy more French fries. No, they don't care. They already got French fries, right? So that never incentivized them. And what I realized though, that if I showed up and tried to be amazing in some capacity, and I don't mean like, hey, look at my abs, go get me more people. That's not that. I think that's just silly. But if I showed up and was amazing, inspiring, really brought energy to the moment, then my clients would have no choice other than say, whoa, this guy, you know what I mean? And I realized that all those years when my mother was like, will you shut up? Will you sit down? Will you stop? It was me being amazing, but she didn't realize it. You know, she didn't understand the genius in what I had. Really, I was just annoying. That's
yeah.
But actually, I'm still just annoying. And but now I just focus that annoyingness on a few ideas or a few concepts, you know, because at the end of the day, the routines are relatively the same, not for, you know, per client, but the idea that you have to strengthen a muscle. It's the same. There's nothing about it. Like if you think of a car mechanic, right? You pull your car in, you get out of the car, he rips your car apart, puts it back together, your car is better. I have to deal with the person, I have to build the car while the person's still in it and saying, why are you ripping that out? Why are you taking it? Does that belong? I don't think that's supposed to come out. Nobody asked you, right? I'm the car mechanic. Just sit in there, drink a cup of tea and just leave me alone. Let me do what I'm doing. But they're in the car the whole time. They feel everything that I rip out. And it's like, are you sure we're supposed to be doing this? Yes, I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to be doing this.
You just touched on some really key points there about when you train people, how they have their preconceived notions that get in the way of allowing to be trained. Like, a personal trainer, like, it's not as easy and glamorous as some of the Instagram
not at all.
Accounts put up because it's like, okay, yeah, great, you have abs, great, you train these notarized people is great, right. But it's an emotional investment on your part.
On my part, I give of myself, but I receive of my, I receive from my clients as well. So it is definitely a give and take in terms of like emotional commitment, if you will, because I don't just do training. I do personal training. So there is a personal investment in there. And I have had times where clients have come to me and, you know, all of my clients are successful in some capacity. Otherwise, they will not be able to afford me. This is not a poor people's game. And I don't mean anything against the poor people, but I'm sorry, I have to make a living as well. But so my clients work at jobs and they become stressed. They have relationships and they become stressed and they do this and they do that and they become stressed. And then they come to a workout to relieve the stress. So short of them just punching a bag in silence, they actually vent. And in that venting, you know, it's not like, oh, here comes another client complaining about their life again. No, it's part and parcel, you know. One client I had, she's a very, very powerful female that worked like, and I don't know exactly what she did because I'm not in that industry, but she was in the banking industry, hedge fund kind of stuff. And I don't know what her title was, but she was one of the higher ups. And it's a male dominated industry. And they always like, who's this girl? And this is the things that she would tell me. And, you know, when she's at work, game face on. And she was that woman. She was that power figure in that thing. And then when she came to me, it was like, ah. And she would let go. And it was just like, I'm so done with proving who I am, even though I've already proven who I am. And I was like, yeah, I get that. I can totally understand that. Because, again, going back to what you asked me before, not enough people have enough patience to listen to what this person's saying. And here's a female. Oh, no.
Yeah.
A female with information. How could it be?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then these guys can't hold it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can't hold that they're getting this or being told what to do from this female. And a couple of times during our session, she broke down. When she broke down, though, let me say this. She broke down during a set. And it had nothing to do with work, but it did. She's pushing. She's doing squats. And I was like, you can do it. You can do it. Come on, push, push, push. And she racked the weight and the tears just started coming. And I was like, whoa. So I threw her a towel. I was like, you know, let it out, dry your face, and then get your ass back under there. And she did, right? She just, it had to come out. But the physical stress allowed the emotional stress to come out. But then you leave it there. It's done. And then you go back. So when my clients come and do this to me, would not do this to me, but do this with me, I'm almost honored. I'm not even almost honored. I am honored that they feel, one, comfortable enough around me to be in that state. Because that's a compromising thing to do. Like, I'm going to go and hang out, and I'm going to cry with my friends. Like, what? You're like, I don't want to hang out with you no more, bro. You keep crying all the time. But it's like, to have that type of relationship with somebody where they feel comfortable enough to actually tell you what really and truly is bothering them or what they're grieving about, that becomes a personal side that I can, I keep that. I have trophies, put it this way, to summarize. I have trophies and medals from fights and from football and stuff like that. You know, I have a little man that's kicking in a nice little trophy that somebody bought in a plastic trophy place. And you walk, you get the trophy and feel good, but then you walk past the trophy store. You're like, hey, they just make those right there? I have a card that one of my clients gave me. And on the front, it just says something. I don't even know what it says on the front, but it's like pre-printed on the front, like a Hallmark thing. When you open the card, it's written from where the middle of the page down the next page, and you close it over, and she wrote all the way down there, just saying how much she appreciated everything we had done together. That's right there on my shelf with the trophies. It's actually on the top, because that to me, that you can't buy that anywhere else. Nobody can go and pick up like, look what I got. Yeah, I have one of those too. No, nobody has this.
Yeah,
nobody has this. I got it. I got it.
That's fantastic. So speaking of this journey that you go on, do you find, and I found this moving to New York City, clearly because it's a city that has a lot of f***ing people. I'm going to take that F word out, but it's a lot of f***ing people. This is like
I was worried because I said ass. I was like, oh, can we curse? I'm sorry. The Muslim, the Irish cursor.
If you compound the three top cities in Australia together, that is not even the population of New York.
Right.
Like, that's just where I'm from. Just letting you know, right?
Right?
Melbourne's got like a third of the population of this city. But what I find about the city and big cities is when people go into Manhattan or they go into their central city center, everyone's so like tensed up.
Oh, yeah, they're all on.
Yeah, like you get into the subway, you have to squash yourself in.
Right.
You have to dodge through the people up the stairs, got to dodge through the people to get to your destination. They're just on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everything's like dodge, weave,
yeah.
I got to get somewhere.
Right.
And the blinkers are on.
Right.
You don't, like I was telling you the other day, I dropped my phone and the lady just stepped over it.
Right.
And I'm like, seriously, bitch, like I would have helped you out. Like I would have, because that's what I'm used to. And then you told me some stories about the hood. I'm like, all right, I get it. I get the empathy. But I'm like, I'm not trying to steal anything from you. Like, is it because I'm brown? And then I'm like, oh my God, I've become a New Yorker all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But so you probably do find, I don't know if you've spoken to different trainers about this, but do you find that city living, there's a lot of compounded stress?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you have the stress, like you said, just from the subway ride in and of itself it's an entire life force of itself, you know? And the proof of that, I mean, you weren't here for this, but we had two things. I think it was like 2004, maybe 2005, we had a blackout. And so all the trains shut down and all the underground life came above ground.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine at any given time in the day, rush hour, how many people are actually under the ground in New York City. And that just exploded onto the streets, right? So buses, I mean, people were sitting on the steps in the buses in the front. They were just kind of leaned and bent over each other. We actually walked home. Me and my son walked home from downtown Brooklyn to Flatbush. What was so crazy about that is his cousin, who was like 2 years old at the time, his aunt worked in the city and she was walking home. But his baby cousin, who was two, was in a stroller with their babysitter, who was from the Bronx. Now, she knows how to get from the train to the train in Brooklyn, but she didn't know how to, when she came up, she didn't know where she was in the middle of Brooklyn.
Wow.
And we literally happened to be walking past them. And I was like, hey, that little girl looks like, and he was like, that is her. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? So we ended up walking them home because she was like, thank God you were here, because I wouldn't have known which way to go. And we all came home. We also got in before it got dark because it's still Brooklyn. But yeah, so all this underground life. So that's, I just say that that's just underground life. That's not even the above ground life, because the above ground life and the high rises and the Wall Streets and the banking, and it's absolutely insane. And then you have the other above ground life of construction workers on the high rises. That's a completely different like lifestyle to navigate, you know? And it all just kind of sits in on top of each other. And the only way people in New York City that I've found can relieve the stress is wine. or personal training.
Yeah. So you're in a good position for.
I'm one side of it. I'm like, but put down the wine. Come over to the light. You know? But yeah, they. I tell people like the chemical aspect of it. Like your adrenaline kicks up. Your cortisol levels rise. Where does that go if your boss yells at you and then you're hurt and but you're like, okay, I'll get it done. No problem. Even though we've already got it done and you're in the right.
Yeah.
Where does that go? It just kind of, it's murking around the body somewhere. And then you come to me and you're like, yeah, everything hurts because of my neck is tight, my shoulder, my this, my that. We got to open things up. And then, you know, I wish in a perfect world that I could get people to train every single day. I mean, maybe take one day off, but like 6 days a week.
Right. Right.
I'm still staring right at you.
Like,
yeah. But I'm just saying, I mean, generally speaking,
that brings me to my next question. How many clients have you made throw up?
Oh, that's not a fair question. Because that's going to scare people. You're going to be like, what are the people don't, you know, why do people don't want to come to personal trainers? Because we're all making them throw up.
I believe there is like a Hall of Fame board in every gym that all the trainers
make that. We used to joke that we would give mop bucket stickers next to clients' names and if they threw up.
Yeah.
So how about this? We'll narrow it down. How many clients have thrown up in the past 2 years?
Okay.
Okay. Only like two.
Only two. I just think that's too many. You almost had three with me the other day. I was like, ugh. I kept it down.
One of my clients, he was a DJ. He is a DJ. He's a DJ. And, you know, he lives the nightlife. That's what he does. And, you know, he was partying and stuff like that. And, you know, he got hung over one time. But this is fun. I was like, well, this is the same thing. But, like, if you throw up with me, you can get right back into the workout. If you throw up from the party and, like, you're still done for another 6 hours. But, like, with mine, it's right back on, you know? He was like, that's actually a good analogy. I was like, I'm just saying.
Do you think, obviously, personal training is what you do for a living.
Correct.
Is there any other career that you would take?
Well, my college degree is in computer programming. Why did you laugh with that? I'm a very intelligent person.
I'm not dishing
it. 3.9 GPA, okay?
I don't know what that means, but I'm assuming. I mean, you can tell me you had a 1.3. I'd be like, yo, he's in the top 1%.
This guy's in the what?
But no, tell me, what would you, so you got a degree in computer programming. Yeah. Clearly something wasn't sitting well for you.
Well, you know, they told me they was making a lot of money when you get out of school. So I was like, all right, great, I'll do it. What I got to do and read these books. All right, cool. And I learned what I had to learn. And I was like, this is boring. You know, and computer programs out there, man, the hell with you, dude. I make more money. And I'm like, so I can beat you up. No, honestly, it would have to be like I always say, if I had, you know, $1 million or multi-$1 million, however much money I needed, I would still be doing what I'm doing. I would still be helping people. I could actually help the poor people that couldn't afford personal training because I wouldn't need the money as much. But I would definitely still be in the industry that I'm in some capacity. I would probably own my own gym, own my own space versus renting the space. But I would definitely be, you know, coaching or teaching or helping people to get fit. Because in the reality, you know, you go back 200, 300, 400 years, you know, it's maybe more than that. I don't know what the timeline is. The point is when people were farming and hunting and gathering and that sort of thing, you know, we moved our bodies. And now we work hard in these office buildings. And I'm not diminishing anybody's career move or choice, but you sit still and work really, really hard. And the body's not meant to sit still. It's meant to move. It's meant to run. So if you're not running, if you're not moving, and if you're not, you know, using these muscles to their full capacity, they just die inside of you. And that's a horrible thing. Because then as you age, as we all are, you become 50 and 60, and then you start walking a little bit slower and so on and so forth. And that's the scariest thing. Like, my aunt is 96 years old, 96. She's lived in the same place, I think, for well over 50, 60 years, easily. Her bathroom's upstairs. She goes upstairs to use the bathroom. She's always had to go upstairs to use the bathroom because that's where the bathroom is. She can still take the stairs. This is my aunt, 96 years old. My mom is 81, 80
yeah,
years old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Motto, don't get upset. My mother is in her 80s. her apartment, everything's on one level, so the bathroom's on the same level. She has difficulty now taking the stairs. The point is that as you age, if you stop doing a thing, you can't do that thing anymore. So there's a statement in Chinese medicine called frozen, they call it the 50-year-old shoulder, which is basically frozen shoulder. Your shoulder just doesn't go up. And even doctors don't know why, but they do realize that if you stop doing this and lifting your hands above your head, pretty soon you won't be able to lift your hands above your head.
Speaking of health, you said that, you know, if you had an abundance of money, one thing that you would do is help the poorer people who couldn't afford personal training. Correct. Train. What is it about America? Now, I want you to be the spokesperson of America here.
Okay.
It seems like the health industry here, it's like they'll make all the shitty, crappy, unhealthy food cheap and the actual organic good food expensive.
Yes.
Don't get me started on health insurance. And then you got the gun laws. I think we had this discussion in one of our training sessions, like, yo, you can have a gun and harm someone, but you're on your own when it comes to that.
If you get shot, you're going to...
What is with that? Tell me.
So to be honest, I don't know. There's a lot of... Listen, I'm American. I love this country. When you love something that you can control, because this is an entity that can be controlled, not a human, right? But when you love something like this, you can make it better. And I'm not going to go into, you know, the politics of the things, but, you know, we can actually work towards making things better. So when it comes down to food, we have a large population of people in the country, and I'm kind of making the scenario up, but we have a large population of people in the country. How do we feed all these people? Well, the scientists and the doctors and the people got together and they tried to figure out a way, and we end up with companies like Monsanto that are the GMOs. They make genetically modifying foods. And they're doing this initially with good intentions, I want to say, because you want to feed the people at a cheaper cost. But then that becomes the norm. So then, you know, just growing a crop that takes a summer or an actual whatever time it takes a crop to grow, that becomes more expensive. So now to get organic, which basically means nobody touched it, nobody did anything to it, we just let it grow and then we picked it and we're giving it to you, it becomes more expensive because of. So we kind of shot ourselves in the foot, another gun analogy, with trying to help. And I think that's what the intention was. So it is horrible. It is horrible because, like, you know, half the world is starving. The other half is trying to lose weight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just a terrible scenario there. So in America, I think what we need to do is really focus on, number one, we have to have universal health care. People have to be able to stay healthy in terms of, you know, doctors and medicine. But even before that, food. Why are people not being able to, Flint, Michigan has no clean water. there's lead in the water. Children have brain disease now. Mm. That's unacceptable. Mm. It's absolutely unacceptable. We are like the most powerful nation in the country, in the world. Like, that doesn't make sense. So we can't get water? Water? I think we can.
Goes to show health insurance really is sick insurance.
Yeah. It's a discount card if you get sick. That's what it comes down.
Exactly. That's so true.
That's all we're doing. I get a coupon.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look, live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.